Now streaming, the Netflix and Swill podcast.
Shalom, my homies. Welcome to another episode of the Netflix and Swill podcast, your source for Netflix news, reviews, and booze. And I am Dan, and there is no Caleb this week, as you can tell, because I am the one doing the intro. Caleb is sick and has lost his voice, which I'm not sure if you're aware, is extremely important for whenever you're doing an audio podcast. So, with no Caleb, it's just me by myself. As I said, I'm repeating myself for emphasis. As Josh did on Drake and Josh, the hit Nickelodeon television show that my parents hated. That being said, I hope you're all having a good day. Therefore, also without Caleb, banter is slow. Banter is very small this week. The big things that I want to talk about are Livestream for the Cure 7. We have that coming up this week. It runs from May 18th through the 20th, maybe a little bit of streaming on the 21st, but nothing crazy, nothing insane. Basically, the past couple of years, we've kind of run ourselves ragged doing the production. It's a lot to do 30-something hours of live streaming content over 3 or 4 days, especially with me traveling and Gerald traveling and having to get us to and from the airport. So, and then Nick has a bunch of other stuff that he does while we're traveling. So it's just a stressful time for all of us. It's all worth it in the end. I mean, we are aiming to raise $25,000 for cancer research for this year. And we're likely well on our way. I think we're at about $700 in early donations. So we're looking to, you know, get about $24,000 over the next week or so, which, you know, is going to happen. I believe in us. We set lofty goals, but we always manage to hit them. And I'm really proud of everybody who does something with Livestream for the Cure. You know, not myself, because I don't need pride in myself, but like Gerald, Nick, Rebecca, for letting us use her house that she bought as like a home base for like 3 grown idiots to run around screaming. Everyone who puts on a segment during the live stream, everyone who checks out the stream, even if they don't donate, even if you don't donate and you come watch the stream, you know, that's one more viewer, and that helps us potentially reach top of viewer boards in like specific categories where, you know, now we can get more viewers, because more viewers when they on Twitch especially like to go into live streams that are live and have a lot of viewers, so that way there's an interactive chat. So anybody who interacts, shares, or just overall like lurks in the stream, you're doing amazing work. And of course, everyone who donates is also doing amazing stuff. So thank you. I am going to personally be a part of 2 segments during live stream for the Cure. So obviously, we have the Netflix and Swill segment. It's at 9 p.m. on Friday night. That is Friday, May 19th. We are watching the movie Naked and reviewing it. Now, I say we are watching. I have already watched Naked, and I have thoughts. I will not say what they are here. I will wait till it's time for the actual live stream itself. And then depending on how much or how little we want to talk about Naked, we might do like the rest of the episode of Netflix and Swill, where we talk about news, trailers, other stuff. So we'll see. So, yes, that's May 19th at 9 p.m. This is Eastern time, by the way. All my times are Eastern time because I live in the Eastern Hemisphere, the Eastern time zone. And I am selfish and don't want to do any of the time conversions for you. That said, there is another block that I'm going to be participating in. It's during our pre-show. It is at 11 a.m. It'll be myself, likely Nick, and Brad. These two are not likely. They'll will definitely be there. Brad from the Cinema Guys and Gerald from Two Piece on a podcast, talking about the new Paramount movie Snag. Now, why are we talking about a Paramount movie at all? That's a great question. I got approached by a rep for, I think it's like M360 Productions. I can look really quickly because I have the email still. Map360 Collective. Okay. So this rep approached me and was like, hey, you know, we're willing to give out codes if you want to promote this for us. We'll give out 5 digital codes that you can give away. And I just went, cool. We actually have the live stream for The Cure coming up. Can we, you know, review the thing and then give out codes as like a donation incentive? And he goes, yeah, sure, absolutely. So the donation incentive is $10 per donation will get you a code to Snag. You can only redeem the code via the Redbox On Demand service. So the website, the app, any of that stuff. So you get a digital code for Redbox, which is a physical media service. We're living in wild times, everybody, where Redbox has its own digital service. So I'll be watching that at some point and then, you know, just make sure that I have that committed to memory. And yeah, so we're going to be doing that. We're going to be giving away those digital codes, however many we have, because I know Brad's going to get some. I know Gerald is probably going to get some. I know a couple other people that say they're going to get some, even though they're not going to be on the review and just pass it over to us, which is great. So as many digital codes as we can get for that movie to try to get you guys to donate money would be great. As for the Netflix and Swill segment, I don't know what our donation incentive is. Last time it was, you know, $420.69 to get my mom on the podcast. This time we don't really have, we never really discussed anything. We don't really know what to do. I'm not going to say getting my mom back on the podcast is off the table because I thought she was great in her solo, like 15 minute appearance, like surprisingly great, considering that it's my mom and she actually restrained herself to not talk the entire time. So I'm proud of her for that. But yeah, I don't know if it's going to be that again because like, no, and this is no offense to her, but like it was like impossible to get her to sit down to do like even the 15 minute review and have her watch the 2-hour movie. So I don't know. I don't know what what the stretch goal is going to be, but I am going to set it again for $420.69. And then we're going to spitball some ideas. We're going to throw it up on probably our Patreon page. It'll be a public poll and then everyone can go vote on it. That's the best I can come up with. Because, again, I don't have a donation goal. And I'm sure we're going to take solicitations from, like, people who want to have certain goals from us that, you know, they want to see us hit. Or, like, what they want to see us do for $420.69 for The Cure. So, I don't know. We'll reach that bridge when it comes to it. Or we'll cross that bridge when we reach it, I guess. I don't know. Idioms. I don't know my idioms. But the important thing that I need to now say is this copy for Snag. I've been requested to read this copy about the movie Snag before I give away my code. So here it all is. If this actually sounds interesting to you, and it kind of does, I'll be honest. It sounds like one of those movies that, you know, you get with the boys and you're drinking some beers with and you're having a good time with. But get ready for an adrenaline-packed ride with Snag, now streaming on Redbox On Demand. This gritty, modern-day fairy tale follows a lone wolf who must rescue the love of his life from a dangerous criminal mob. With heart-pumping action and intense suspense, Snag will keep you on the edge of your seat from beginning to end. Don't miss out on this must-see movie. Stream Snag instantly on Redbox today. Rated R from Paramount Pictures. And with that, I'm going to move into What's Your Swill?
Can we please get some alcohol into my mouth?
He hates these cans! Stay away from the cans!
All right, and for this week's What's Your Swill, I have a vodka tonic with my jalapeno vodka. I know, boring, but also, I'm a bit crazy whenever I have to leave my house for multiple days. I like to finish off things. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to finish off the rest of it, but there's probably enough to make, like, one or two more drinks out of this. So, yeah, I'm going to work on getting it done, because I feel like it's kind of old now, if you know what I mean. Like, I know alcohol really isn't like spoil or anything, but like it's an older alcohol that I've had for weeks, and I think it's just time to get it out of the house. And also the flavor is just too sharp now on the jalapeno. Like, it's just, it doesn't taste like jalapeno. There's no floralness to anything. It's just sharp and like heat. I like the heat, but I like it as like the aftertaste when there's something good in front of it. And it just being like just sharp heat is nothing good. It's not something I look forward to. And like, yes, I want to drink this. Well, okay, it's time to get into the news, and there's actually quite a bit of news stories, so just bear with me as we go through the multitude of them.
Oh, shit, it's mail time.
All right, so our first news story is that Lockwood & Co. has been canceled after one season. So this was another Netflix young adult science fiction fantasy show with too much of a CGI budget, I'm guessing, and the viewership for it was poor at best. It debuted back in February with 25 million hours, peaked at 39 million hours, and fell off of Netflix's top 10 report after just 17 days. And when you're Netflix, and Netflix has habitually shown that the first 28 days of a piece of content's life cycle, that those are the most important. And that is actually kind of shown by data that when it doesn't even continue to chart in its first 28 days, there's problems. Now, even shows that do chart for its first 28 days on Netflix, even those aren't always safe because the numbers there aren't good either, and everything else is just bad. There's just bad viewership all around. So, yeah, Lockwood & Co. pulling in a grand total of, as I find it here, just under 80 million hours viewed in 17 days is very, very bad. I know people are like, well, why can't I just can't trust Netflix to keep shows around for me to watch. And it's just like, I mean, it's a chicken and the egg scenario. You either watch the shows and do your part of the equation to get the show renewed, or you don't watch the show and then the show gets canceled because you weren't watching it and a bunch of other people followed the same mindset of you not watching it, and now the show's canceled and you complain that Netflix cancels too many shows. It's a weird paradigm that we're currently in, and I don't want to blame viewers too much because I do feel like Netflix has a lot to blame for its own misgivings, but as we've seen recently with shows like Warrior Nun, Resident Evil, Shadow and Bone, which is doing very poorly as well, these young adult shows with heavy sci-fi slash fantasy themes that carry this mid-level budget are not putting any return on investment for the company, seemingly, because they're getting rid of almost all of them. And it's another genre that I just wonder if Netflix needs to just slow down on and focus on other shows. Because people bitch that like Stranger Things gets like a $300 million budget and then breaks streaming records for like most viewed product on Netflix. And it's like, well, that's why. Because of that. Obviously, that's going to be the solution, is that the shows that show they can, that they're worth that higher price tag, get the higher price tag. But these other young adult shows, man, they're not hitting. Shadow and Bone did almost nothing. I have to look this up because I have the chart, because I have charts for fucking everything. I mean, Shadow and Bone, okay, so Shadow and Bone actually had a respectable run. It had 160 million hours viewed, but that's not something you look at and go, oh yeah, that's something that we're really, really happy about. You know, when Stranger Things gets that in a weekend, like that's, you're not looking at a successful show. And I compare Shadow and Bone to a bunch of other shows on this list, and it just pales in comparison to infinitely cheaper shows that have been made by Netflix. So I don't know. It's a genre that Netflix needs to figure out or abandon. Or not even abandon, but like put something of quality behind. Because obviously the people you have show running, and this is also a problem with the writer's strike, the people you have show running aren't doing anything to make their shows of any good quality where people even want to check it out in the first place. And that's the issue with Lockwood & Co. It looked like a generic YA show where it's like, I could tell, I didn't even watch the show. I could tell the plot almost immediately. It's about two brothers who get a girl who shows up and they're like, all right, we want to take on the top ghost inspectors or whatever the hell Lockwood & Co. is about in Britain. And we're gonna do it. And it's going to be like that Ghostbusters thing where we're telling everybody what's happening and what's going on. They don't believe us because we're inexperienced and children. And then it turns out we were right the whole time. They all get trapped and then we go save them. I guarantee that's the first season. I guarantee it. While building like interpersonal relationships in between for the team. Guarantee that's the first season. That's not interesting. If I already know what the show is before I even watch it, just by watching the trailer, and it's not something I'm readily familiar with because I'm not readily familiar with a young adult production like Lockwood & Co., which is based on a book, I don't care. So Netflix needs to do something better with these shows. Because you can't just keep giving these like $50 million to $100 million budgets to these shows that don't get any viewers. Something needs to change. And also, I need people on the internet to stop pretending that the show that isn't getting great viewership deserves to be kept around just because you think it does. If the viewership says that a show probably shouldn't be kept around, it shouldn't be kept around. It's just the way it works. And fortunately, we're going to be dodging that with Sweet Tooth, but I look at even Sweet Tooth, and Sweet Tooth is outperforming Shadow and Bone right now. Is that true? Let me see. 105. Yeah. Sweet Tooth is like barely outpacing Shadow and Bone in terms of total viewership hours. But if you dig into like weighted viewing average or complete viewing equivalents for Sweet Tooth, like the viewership's just better for it. It's about weighted viewing equivalent through first 2 weeks or like first, what, 10, 11 days for Sweet Tooth is 15.85. And for Shadow and Bone, it's like 13.22. Yeah, there we go. I did the math all like in my head. I was just staring at it. I don't know. I just continue to look at this genre and go, what will Netflix have once Stranger Things is done? And it just seems like the YA production is just constantly going to be a bunch of unfinished products that no one's watching because none of these productions are either getting marketed well enough to where they're grabbing people off the bat, or the productions themselves aren't good enough for people to continue to watch. So something at Netflix has to change. I'm not sure what it is, but somebody they need to bring in somebody who understands this content slate to oversee it. And it's probably going to be somebody who reports to Bella Baraja. I think it's her name. Bella Baraja, something like that. They need somebody who reports to her that understands it, because I don't know if she can handle all of it. But hey, that's just one guy's opinion. Let's move on to the next story, which is that, speaking of YA productions, Sweet Tooth is renewed for a third and final season. So this really isn't news this really isn't like a surprise. Casey Mora told me apparently last summer that Sweet Tooth seasons 2 and 3 were shooting back to back. So the show was shot and completed last year, which is great. Like, it's a great idea to ensure that your production finishes, is that you already have principal photography completed and all you need to do is edit. Now, of course, it didn't work for like Batgirl, but Netflix is looking at stocking up a war chest now that we have the writer's strike going on. Netflix wants things that are, you know, headed towards post-production or already in post-production, ready to go. So that way, it can continue to put out content while cable and network television don't have anything new to put out because of the seasonal model and the way the seasons work and where the writer's strike is happening.
where other streamers are putting out content very sparingly, comparatively, especially to Netflix. So stocking up on that war chest, depending on how long this writer's strike goes, is good for Netflix. It's also good for Sweet Tooth to do it, because then it forces Netflix's hand basically to say, hey, we got done. You can't really cancel us unless you want to say, like, hey, we fucked up and we have all this principal photography stuff. And not to mention, Sweet Tooth is a Warner production, a Warner Brothers production. And I'm sure that Warner Brothers would love to snatch that up if they could from Netflix by Netflix canceling it. So by giving it a complete season run, a complete series run, Netflix gets a W in terms of its cancellation record. It gets the complete series that it has for, I'm going to guess, 5 to 10 years on its platform that people can watch. And then it reverts back to Warner Brothers, unless Warner and the entire streaming service landscape has changed to where it's just beneficial to let Netflix just continue to have the rights in return for, you know, a licensing fee. So, yeah, happy for Sweet Tooth. Very happy to see it get a finale season. All right, final story. This comes from the Wall Street Journal. It says, Netflix plans to cut spending by $300 million in 2023. So I'm just going to basically read directly from the Wall Street Journal article just to make sure I don't mince words, but, and then I'll talk about it afterwards. So the company is looking to cut costs in part because its plans to crack down on password sharing broadly in the U.S. and elsewhere were pushed back from the first to second quarter. The change is expected to generate new revenue. Talking point. In an internal meeting earlier this month, company leaders urged staffers to be judicious with their spending, including in relation to hiring, but said there would be no hiring freeze or additional layoffs. And then later down, Netflix has looked for a variety of ways to control or cut spending, including through layoffs, paring its real estate footprint, changes in salary ranges for certain roles, and new approaches to paying for programming. The pilot? Are they talking about the pilot system? Oh, it's about comedy deals. Okay. I'm not going to dig into the comedy deals thing, but let's talk about it. So, $300 million. If this is strictly in content budgeting, Netflix has about a content budget of about $17 billion. So, $300 million versus a $17 billion content budget is about 1.5%, which is microscopic. If we're talking about overall operating expenses, Netflix plans to spend $26 billion? Yes, $26 billion, which $300 million is also a little over 1% of those operating expenses. So again, these are, when you look at $300 million, it is a large number, and I'm not going to say it's not a large number. But when you put it in the context of what Netflix is planning to spend versus what it's going to cut, it's barely a blip on the radar. So yes, it's news that the leader in streaming is cutting expenses and costs, but it's also kind of not news because the writer's strike is happening, so that likely means that new productions are being put on hold. And with however long the writer's strike happens, Netflix might be baking that into this $300 million reduction in spending. But that's just a guess. I have no internal people at Netflix. This is all reporting done by the Wall Street Journal. I'm just interpreting. So, look, the password sharing crackdown thing I want to talk about, because Netflix says it anticipates it, like that crackdown, to increase revenue. And I'm a staunch believer that that's not going to be the case ever, because how many people legitimately are going to go from not paying for Netflix because their aunt, uncle, brother, mom, dad pay for, you know, son, daughter pay for a plan that, and let them share it, and now all of a sudden they likely have to go to buy their own plan for anywhere from $13 to $20. This is not going to happen. I just don't see how it's going to happen. Unless the paid sharing plan comes in and, you know, it's like $4 and you get to share it with whoever for, like, it's $4 per additional household. Like, and even then, I think that's a lot. So I don't know. I don't see how it raises revenue for Netflix. Unless, like, there are you have people literally falling over themselves ready to do this password sharing thing. I don't see it. I think this is still, and I've said this many, many times, an unforced error by Netflix, that Netflix didn't have to do this, that every other streaming company is kind of in trouble-ish now. I don't follow everything else, but based off of news reports that I see, and I know I can't trust all of them because the news reports I see about Netflix come out, and I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking about? But the news reports I see about, like, HBO Max, Peacock, Paramount, Disney, Amazon to a degree, it all seems like they're scrambling for ways to find money, and the best way for them to find money is to just license out their productions again, where they have their streaming home, which is, you know, Peacock, Paramount Plus, whatever, and then, you know, they lease out older productions that Netflix or like, you know, Amazon could have, or like even like Tubi. I don't know. It just feels like the money's on the table and everyone saw the Netflix money and thought we can have that. And it's just not happening. There are always going to be winners and losers. And I think Sony never participating in that rat race was arguably the shrewdest move of the streaming wars so far. Where, I mean, yes, they have Crunchyroll. Yes, they have Funimation. But it doesn't have, like, a general streaming service that it needs to have and worry about upkeep, worry about putting on content. It just licenses out its stuff and basically prints money for things it's already completed. So, I don't know. I just look at it, at the whole streaming landscape at this current moment, and wonder, is the password sharing crackdown worth it for Netflix? I say no. I just don't see how this is gonna wind up going good for them. I think the big thing that works in Netflix's favor is it consistently pumps out content, unlike the other streaming services where it feels like I go months at a time without hearing about something that's actually of note or consequence. Disney Plus's Marvel/Star Wars content only, and the track record for non-Marvel, non-Star Wars Pixar content, and Disney to a degree, Disney, like, movie productions, is, like, barren and doesn't last very long. I mean, look at Willow. That lasted one season. And there's issues with every other streaming service. Like, what the hell is HBO Max doing at this point? Although, I think it's actually in a better position than people want to say. But people just fucking hate David Zaslav so much that they're just willing to shit on the streaming service just because. Peacock, I don't see what it is. Like, Peacock only has 22 million subs, which is nothing. Like, that's 10% of what Netflix has. And I just don't think that streaming service is long for this world. I don't know. I just look at the streaming landscape and go, with everybody else seemingly struggling, and your Netflix, why would you also shoot yourself in the foot when everybody else is already limping well behind you? I've ranted enough about this. I can't have this conversation anymore because I just feel so strong, and I feel so strongly that I repeat myself about it. So, yeah, Netflix, you just need to figure it the fuck out. And with that, we're going to move into downstream. We're going to talk about trailers that have hit for some Netflix originals coming to Netflix soon.
Baby, I can't control the internet.
That's my favorite line!
All right, first trailer is for A Beautiful Life. If you have nothing to die for, what are you even alive for? Okay. We are super excited to see Christopher playing Elliot, who bargains on a journey to find his people and his voice in A Beautiful Life, coming to Netflix June 1. When a young fisherman with a hidden talent gets discovered by a music producer, he must decide if he's ready to open himself up to stardom and love. First of all, I don't even know who the fuck Christopher is. Do you guys know who Christopher is? Apparently, Christopher is a music artist who is starring in a movie. And this feels like, to a degree, what Purple Hearts was in 2020? Was Purple Hearts in 2022? If it was in fucking 2022, Jesus Christ, help me. It feels like it's so long ago. But it feels like that, where the entire movie, and the trailer for Purple Hearts was also like this, where it was like, hey, we have original work from this pop artist who's starring in the movie. And it's like, okay, cool. Who are they? I've never heard of them. I guess mainly because I don't listen to that kind of music. But, like, I just listen. I just look at this trailer and just go, this is intended to work off of people who are fans of this man, whoever Christopher is, and get them to watch this movie so it can become one of Netflix's most watched movies of all time. It is not in English, so we're going to be able to easily track this on the Netflix non-English films top 10 report. Will it beat Troll? I'm going to be very interested to see if it can, because this feels like it has more general appeal than Troll did. And if you look at that top 10 list from Netflix and look at the non-English films, not the overall one I'm talking about here. Like, so you have a bunch of like higher concept productions like Troll, Blood Red Sky, The Platform, All Quiet on the Western Front. Black Crab is probably the first one that's like pretty generic in what it's going for and probably applies to everybody. Like, but like All Quiet on the Western Front is like, even that's like a war movie, so that has like general appeal to it. But like Troll, Blood Red Sky, The Platform, those all feel like, you know, very like niche genre pieces that somehow exploded. Now, of course, The Platform is aided a lot by the pandemic. Troll was well marketed. Blood Red Sky, I'll never understand why anybody likes that movie. I think that movie's hot garbage. But yeah, Beautiful Life, I just look at it and just go, this is so generic. There's like no way this doesn't do well. So we'll see. Maybe I'll find out who Christopher is. I'm probably not going to watch it, but maybe I'll find out who Christopher is. Our next trailer is for Never Have I Ever, the final season. Yep, we did it. The fourth and final season of Never Have I Ever is almost here, and it's a banging ending. Get ready for senior year, nerds. Never Have I Ever, the final episodes, premieres June 8th, 2023. Why are they called the final episodes? Let's call it fucking season four. Okay, whatever. Senior year has finally arrived. Between college conundrums, identity crises, and crushes that won't fade, are Davey and the gang ready to face the future? I don't need to say too much about Never Have I Ever. We talk pretty glowingly about the show overall. We recommend it highly. It's probably one of my favorite teen shows ever. This entirely revolves around teens. Like, it's up there with like Cobra Kai, where like, although this is like different sensibilities, where it is more slice of life, and Cobra Kai is just like taking place in this alternate universe where karate is king. And Never Have I Ever kind of feels like it's taking place in reality to a degree. Now there are some heightened situations, obviously, but still it feels like a real show. It's probably my favorite, like I said, of these teen shows. Caleb might also say the same. Now, I'm not going to call, like, Stranger Things a teen show, because it's to me wildly different from, like, you know, Never Have I Ever. But, yeah, if you haven't caught the show, check it out. You have almost a month to catch up on all the episodes and then be able to watch season four, the final season, when it hits. All right, next trailer is for Run, Rabbit, Run. Sarah Snook plays a single mother frightened by her young daughter's inexplicable memories of a past identity. That's the only synopsis. So they really want you to know that Sarah Snook is in this movie. Sarah Snook, of course, and I'm probably saying this name wrong, from Succession. This trailer looks bad. This was a festival acquire by Netflix, but this trailer looks very bad. Looks super, super generic. It's probably going to run for 90 minutes, which is the appropriate amount of time for a horror movie. or a thriller or whatever the hell this is supposed to be. I also get Babadook vibes from it, and I hate the Babadook so fucking much. So, like, if we have nothing else to watch that week, we're probably going to watch this instead of nothing. But yeah, man, I don't see it. I don't want this. I don't need this. I also feel like the popularity of Succession is overrated based off of Nielsen viewing numbers, which aren't like they're good for the show, but like it's no Game of Thrones. It's not like a cultural phenomenon watching Succession. But the way that like film critics and TV critics talk about Succession, it's like it's the only show that's ever been good ever on HBO. And it's just wild to see like the difference in like critic versus audience. Now I mention it all the time where, you know, critics and audiences don't agree. And this is another one where it feels like critics and audiences don't agree. It's just like people either really love it or just like, man, I don't understand this show. Ashley watches it. I don't understand this show at all. I don't get why anybody gives a shit. It just seems like it's okay. And I'm glad you guys like it. But like, I just think its popularity is overstated. So I feel like if you're marketing a movie entirely around Sarah Snook, who is like one of the bigger stars of the show on Succession, along with like Brian Cox, Jeremy Strong, Kieran Culkin, or Rory Culkin, one of the Culkins that's not Macaulay. Like, I just look at that and just go, are you sure this is the correct way? Because I feel like the general public has no idea who this woman is. And who knows? Maybe they'll find out who she is. Maybe this will be the big breakout hit that she needs in order to become like prevalent across like America and other countries. But I just continue to feel like this movie's going to be a dud. No one's going to talk about it. And after Succession's up, I'm not going to say her career is going to be dead, but you know, it's be like, wow, why didn't Sarah Snook get more work until, you know, this next big project she's in that gets tons of production, like tons of promotions and such. I just don't get it. So if you wind up liking this, everybody, good for you. But, you know, I'm just not looking forward to it. All right. Final trailer is for Arnold. This is not Hey Arnold, this is about Arnold Schwarzenegger. So this three-part documentary series chronicles never-before-seen footage and stories of Arnold Schwarzenegger's journey from rural Austria to the highest echelons of the American dream. In the series, there's unprecedented access to the most candid interviews from Schwarzenegger, his friends, foes, co-stars, and observers. Oh man, I hope we see Sly Stallone. We see many talk about his days pumping iron to his triumphs in Hollywood, all the way to his time governing the state of California. The joys and the turbulence of his family life are unveiled in a tale that matches his larger-than-life persona. This intimate docuseries follows Arnold Schwarzenegger's multifaceted life and career from bodybuilding champ to Hollywood icon to politician. So, Netflix is into this weird space of documentaries where it is choosing celebrities and then shooting documentaries about them in hopes that people watch it. We saw this with we had a Taylor Swift documentary, Miss Americana, that Gerald made me watch, and I was like, this is fine, I'm ambivalent to whoever Taylor Swift is, but you know, this is a fine documentary. Beyonce had something. More recently, Conor McGregor had something. Kanye West had something. Now Arnold. It just feels like Netflix is going out and getting documentaries for these kind of cult of personality types that people look at and go, yeah, that's somebody like I could really aspire to be. And it's just a weird approach to what Netflix is doing, or like to having a strategy at all. Because Genius, which was the Kanye West thing, didn't do great in viewership. Now, of course, I believe this came out around the time of him going on anti-Semitic rants. So Wonderful fucking timing. I would have just shelved that for his redemption tour. The Taylor Swift documentary did solid. So did the Beyonce one. Conor McGregor's hasn't come out recently, or hasn't come out yet. So, like, I don't know. I just wonder if this is, like, if Netflix thinks this is, like, the next unexplored territory, or if this is Netflix thinking it's the next unexplored territory, and it's not a territory anybody really gives a shit about. I feel like Arnold is probably the closest we're going to get to somebody who's not very polarizing. In general, it feels like a lot of people love Arnold Schwarzenegger. I know a lot of people dislike Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Conor McGregor, especially Kanye. So it's going to be interesting to see what somebody who is as seemingly beloved as Arnold Schwarzenegger can pull in terms of viewership. I know Caleb will probably be watching this because he loves Arnold. I, again, am ambivalent to celebrity culture. The celebrities I care about are like Blink-182 and whenever Tom DeLonge's movie comes out. It's the only things I really care about. So, I mean, I guess also the Vanderpump Rules shit, which the next episode is all post like Scandaball stuff, which is going to be fantastic to watch. I don't know. I just feel like this is a weird spot to be in terms of content. But if it's cheap to make, go for it. And if it pulls in viewership, go for it. But I just don't see how it does that. I don't see where that line comes in and Netflix goes, yes, this is what we want to keep doing. But I'm willing to be proven wrong. I've been proven wrong many times before in the past. We'll see with Arnold. That'll move us into quick hits. So I'm going to talk about a couple things. I'm just going to talk about Sweet Tooth. This is where I leave you, The Mother and The Last Stand. These are all going to be like very brief, like 1 to 2 minute talks. So we'll go to Sweet Tooth season 2. I enjoyed it. I'm very excited to see where season 3 goes. And I'm expecting a quicker turnaround time on season 3 because, you know, shooting back to back, we're probably going to get about this time next year, which sounds about right, unless Netflix has content holes that it needs to fill. And then it probably hits around the new year, is my guess. The kids are good. For the most part, there's characterization with the animal kids that I just like, man, at no point should Gus be hanging out with these kids after everything is done. But I mean, the show is the show, and Gus has his everlasting optimism and seeing the good in people and empathizing with people. So whatever, if that's what the show wants to do, that's what the show wants to do. So good for it. The adults are all good. The general, who I thought was supposed to be entirely American, keeps busting out an English accent. I don't know if they just gave up on having him do an accent because maybe he can't do an American accent. But he just kept slipping in and out of American and like British, and it was very distracting. So I enjoy the season overall. It looks great. The stuff with Aditya Singh and Ronnie Singh is fantastic. So yeah, I'm really invested in seeing where season 3 goes because I've never read the comic book or the graphic novel or whatever the hell it is. But I'm interested to see what happens. This is where I leave you. It's a dysfunctional family comedy starring Jason Bateman, so you know it's got to be good. It is good. It's a good little like slice of life kind of thing where not everyone gets to be happy and everyone's life is kind of miserable. But like, even if your family drives you crazy, they're still your family and they're still around to support you. I like that message. It's a nice message for families. It's a good movie. You know, it's nice and it's saccharine at points, but yeah, I enjoyed it for the most part. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but there you go, Mom. I've talked about it. Next up, The Mother. This is the J-Lo movie that's currently taking over Netflix. It's number one in 83 countries on Netflix's top 10. Don't be fooled by that. Everyone likes to point that out and be like, oh, it's top 10. It's number one in a bunch of countries. Okay, so what? Like that mean that could mean like four people are watching it and no, they're not watching any other movies. Like what, like just listening to that kind of story is just like eh. And also, it's like a new movie from Netflix. Like, of course, the new movie from Netflix that has like general appeal because it's an action movie starring J-Lo, who is, you know, even in these years, still a recognizable star. Of course, that's going to be on the tops of Netflix. Will the movie actually do well in terms of viewership? Probably not. I think the movie is very bad. I don't think J-Lo is a very good action star. There's this distracting use of fisheye lens, which is just ever obstructive and intrusive, and it just took me out of the movie every time it was used. The action's not very good. The plot resolution is whatever. It just feels like it's a 90s movie, and that's fine. It was a 90s movie 30 years later starring J-Lo, and it just needed, like, the movie just needed to evolve past that and get to a more modern stage of action movie. And I'm not expecting J-Lo to be Keanu Reeves, but, like, I expect her to be able to do more stunts. Also, there's very bad distracting use of green screen. Like, it's very obvious whenever they're in front of green screen. It's just wild to me to the point that, like, why is anybody using green screen in Hollywood anymore? Or, like, why hasn't green screen technology evolved past what it currently is? Because I know there's the video board technology that Disney uses for, like, The Mandalorian. Netflix used that for $18.99. And all that stuff looked great. Everything looked natural. But for whatever reason, other people are not using this video board technology. And maybe because it's so goddamn expensive to shoot their movies. And if you're not going to do it on location, get something better than green screen because it's not working anymore. So yeah, big fail on The Mother. I didn't have any high hopes for it, but man, it sucks. It sucks a lot. And then finally, The Last Stand. This is Arnold's return to... speaking of Arnold, in fact, this is Arnold Schwarzenegger's return to acting after governating. The movie's... fine. It's not even fine. It's actually bad. It is a bad movie. The big issue with it is that, like, when the action's going, the action's great. They're using squibs. They're using practical blood. It looks great. Like, the action's great. And, like, you get really into it because it's comical at times. Like, it's really enjoyable when the action's going. But when they're just fucking talking, it's so boring. It's just such a generic plot. And no, we don't know why anybody's with anybody. You just look at it and you're just like, okay, the writing here is awful, but, like, the action's good, except for the climax, which takes place on a bridge, and the bridge is green screened to hell, and it's just like, ugh. Like, the movie was building to this final confrontation between Arnold and the big bad, and all I'm saying during the entire confrontation is, wow, this green screen looks bad. Like, it's not like, I'm commenting on the fight because, like, there's some brutal shit in the fight, but, like, I'm just watching and just being like, why is this green screen so bad? Like, why aren't you on location somewhere? Like, you don't even have to be, like, on a bridge. Like, put it over, like if you put the bridge down and then, like, put blue tarp around, like, we're for a canyon, fine. But, like, the way you've done this is you've completely taken me out of the movie with this awful green screen. So, for the action, like, the action's pretty good. I would give it, like, an 8 out of 10, but, like, the rest of the, like, but the action's only, like, 30 minutes of, like, a 100-minute movie. So, like, for the action itself, it's, like, a 4 out of 5. Like, the action's great. I mean, the big knock is the green screen at the end, but even still, the action is still very good. And then you get the just placeholder, we gotta get to the big action sequences, so we need to pad the runtime plot line. It's just so bad. It's like a 2. Or actually, it's like a 1. So, like, the movie winds up being, like, 2.5, only because the action's so good, but yeah, it, like, you have to, like, kind of struggle to get there. I mean, Arnold's charming, but he's also kind of stunted because it's like He really hasn't acted before this in a long time. Johnny Knoxville's high on cocaine or whatever the fuck he's on. I don't know. I see what the movie was going for. I appreciate what the movie was going for, but like, there was just so many better ways to go about it, and it just failed. And then I watched the first episode of Beef, and that's the only episode I watch. I don't understand why anybody likes this show. I don't root for either character so far. They both seem like awful, awful people. Even though the show wants to present them as like people who are having a bad day, they're just awful people. They're just awful. So we're going to see if we want to continue to watch it, but I don't know when I'm going to have time to watch it because I got other stuff to watch. Like I've already watched Naked. I have to watch Snag before I get on a flight. So I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it when I get back, but I had all weekend to watch more of it and I felt no inclination to get back to it. So I might have to just start fresh again to rewatch and just like force myself to binge it. I'm glad you guys all liked it, but I just don't see it, man. Okay, so next week on the show, it will be our live stream for The Cure audio rip. So there we'll have our review of Naked, plus we'll likely record something separate for news, downstream, quick hits, a bunch of stuff. So yeah, a regular-ish episode of Netflix and Swill. Please come out. Our segment again is May 19th at 9 p.m. Eastern time. There's also the Snag review at 11 a.m. Eastern time on May 19th as well. Please check both of those out. Please donate. Please help us raise $25,000 for cancer research. But as for us, you can find the show at netflixandswill.com. I'm at Dan of Action on Twitter. Because I don't want Netflix to take away our Twitter account. It has 1,900 followers, and 1,900 followers is a lot, and it's a status symbol. Even if I am paying for Twitter Blue using the Patreon money, you'll get over it. Thank you to Space Weather for the use of our theme song, Bitter, which is how people feel about me having a blue check mark on Twitter and having that as their only clapback whenever I make a good point against them. And until next week, this is Dan saying, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Netflix and Swill is an independent podcast. As such, we believe in the scrappy underdogs of the podcast world. If you're an indie podcast and would like us to run your promo on our show, please contact us. The little guys need to stick together. If you enjoy what we're doing, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts and telling a friend. The more we grow, the better the show will be. Thank you for being part of the Netflix and Swill family.